Boyhood in America isn't what it used to be. Check out these statistics. ADHD is diagnosed 7 times as often in boys as it is in girls. Only 65% of boys graduate from high school, much lower than the rate for girls. And 29% of boys admit to drinking alcohol before the age of 13. Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickard, in this week for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today we'll find out what we can do to raise boys who are healthy, moral, and happy. Our guest this hour is Meg Meeker. She practices pediatric and adolescent medicine and counsels teens and their parents. She's the author of the book, Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. Are you worried about boyhood in America? And what works in your family to raise healthy boys? Are we ready to celebrate the rough and tumble aspects of boyhood? And what really works for troubled boys? You can call us and weigh in this morning at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Meg Meeker, so glad you could be with us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me, Veronica.
Well, over the years, you've worked extensively with boys and their parents, and what you've seen has alarmed you in terms of today's culture of boyhood. Could you tell us a little bit about what you're seeing?
Sure. Well, I'm a mother of a 16-year-old boy. He's the baby in our family. We have three older daughters going up to 24, 22, and 20. And I've been taking care of kids and teenagers for years and years and years, and I've seen a big shift, I think, in the attitude toward boys that can be kind of subtle, you know, in our culture, and then, you know, maybe from teachers. But I think the thing that has alarmed me most since I actually did my training, which I finished in Milwaukee, which is kind of fun, you know, in the 1980s, is the number of boys who are, you know, sort of brought in tow with their mothers, and mothers very, very concerned because teachers are complaining about them, worried about them, their behavior, and so on and so forth, you know, and think, well, does he need medication, does he not? And the sharp rise in that compared to the number of girls that come into my office with that, you know, of course, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a real disorder. Many boys do need some medication, and girls as well. But I think that many times boys are brought in who don't have it, who are really struggling with some other issues that parents and teachers just don't really know what to do with. And I think that sometimes those issues mask themselves as attention deficit. And what I find is that a lot of these boys end up sort of feeling bad about themselves. They wonder, you know, why can't mom and dad handle me? You know, what do teachers think? And they just sort of feel like they don't fit anywhere. And we have noticed a drop in the percent of boys graduating from high school relative to girls. And the same is true with college and then on to professional school. So, you know, I really wanted in the book to put the spotlight back on boys for a while. You know, heaven knows we've had a lot of the spotlight for a while, and girls are, you know, kind of off and running and doing pretty well. But I really wanted to focus on boys again to say we need to relook and make sure that, you know, we're meeting their needs, that they're educationally getting what they need, and certainly medically, not being over-diagnosed, but, of course, not being under-diagnosed as well.
Well, there seems to be a new movement afoot just to do just what you're talking about. I mean, maybe, I don't know if it began with the Dangerous Book for Boys, but that's certainly been part of it. And, you know, there's been other books about raising healthy sons in this society that seems to be biased against boys, like the book Raising Cain. I think Michael Thompson wrote that one.
Yes.
And I wonder if you think that we're seeing a turning point here where we're recognizing that maybe something has gone wrong with the way we're raising boys, and then it's time to correct it and time to celebrate boyhood.
I think so. I really do. I think so. I think that boys, in some ways, you know, are victimized. I know we kind of, it's a harsh word to use, but certainly, you know, young boys, 9 to 14-year-old boys, are the target consumer for a lot of the video games that come out. And, you know, some are okay, some are terrible. You know, the Grand Theft Auto, I just think is horrific for boys. A lot of young boys playing this, you know, because boys naturally are visual people. Even from the time of birth, you know, if you look at a baby boy compared to a baby girl, and you show moving objects and hang it over the little boy's head compared to little girls versus a person's face, if you put the moving object in the face next to one another and show it to a boy, boys are much more likely to gravitate to the moving object. A little girl will focus on the face. So we know that boys are sort of drawn to, you know, screens and action movies and video games and so on and so forth. And I think that this has taken a huge toll on boys, very, very harmful for them. I think that's one of the big changes in boys' lives in the past 10 years that that is influencing their behavior. There's, you know, emotionally it's influencing them. And so I really hope that we will see more focus on boys and what's going on in their lives, what's influencing them, and kind of protect them a little bit more, I guess, if you will. And, you know, just for parents to pay more attention and to focus a little more on how their boys are being treated, what they're watching, you know, what's going on in school. Do they really having a learning issue or attention issue, or perhaps is it something else going on in their lives? I really do hope that the focus comes back onto boys a little bit more.
Well, when you talk about boys being attracted to, you know, moving images and video games and TV, I mean, I guess if that's, you know, true as you say it is, that opens them up to a whole lot of other influence as well, including, you know, the over-sexualization of our culture and the violence that comes with certain TV shows and movies and even video games. And is that part of the problem here, too, the content that's coming in?
Oh, it's an enormous problem. And I think that for us parents, you know, the parents who are parenting, you know, 35 and older, it all kind of snuck by us because, you know, we're often doing things and we're sort of stuck thinking that television and music sort of has a kind of a softness to it that it really no longer has. It changes so fast. And we studies show that the increase in the amount of sex and the amount of violence and also the intensity of sex and the intensity of violence in television and movies and video games has escalated enormously in the past 10 and 15 years. And parents don't keep up with those changes as much as kids do because our lives aren't changing quite as much as kids do. And now we have a lot of really good data to show that boys who watch violence over a number of years in movies and video games do end up behaving more aggressive as they move into their 20s. So, you know, there really is an effect, and I do believe that we can, you know, make that correlation as well for sexualization of boys. It doesn't just happen with girls. There is an over-sexualization of boys at a very early age because of the exposure to the increase in sex in media and the intensity of it. I really believe it has a profound effect on boys emotionally and behaviorally.
Well, I think the tendency as far as sex goes is to say, well, they're teenage boys. Of course they're sex obsessed. That's what teenage boys are. But you talk about how, you know, teenage boys who've been exposed to hardcore pornography online, they're not, you know, enjoying it necessarily. They're freaked out. They're disgusted. They're scared sometimes, and those images, you know, far from being what they necessarily want, go on to sometimes warp their sexuality.
Exactly. And I know that this is a real touchy subject, but what I'm here to do is to help boys, you know, develop a healthy sexuality and give it time to mature and grow and for them to figure it all out, because it's a complicated issue, you know, during the early adolescent and the teen years. And the sexuality of a boy really sits at the center of who he is. It's connected to his ability to love, his ability to experience intimacy. It's a physical issue. It's an emotional issue. Some boys say it's a spiritual issue. And so it's very complicated. And when boys are exposed to sexual images that are disturbing to them too much too soon, you know, in the old days, 25, 30 years ago, boys would grab a Playboy and they'd go into the woods and they'd kind of look at it, and maybe they were 13, 14 years old. Well, looking at a page in a Playboy magazine in a woods is a very different issue than what happens many times to the 9 and 10-year-old boys who are exposed to hardcore pornography on the Internet. There's a level of violence that they experience that you wouldn't necessarily have seen in a Playboy magazine, for instance, to, you know, just sort of use this comparison. And it can be very disturbing to boys. It can hook boys. And we know, too, the AMA has just come out and said that Internet addiction is a real, and it, you know, they want to use it as a classification of a psychological disorder. I mean, because we know that boys can become addicted. Of course, girls can too. But again, boys are more drawn to the Internet and to the visual stimulation more so than girls. So boys are being exposed to more pornography at an earlier age, more violent pornography at an earlier age than ever before, and they're more likely to get hooked into it than girls are. And so they're much, much more vulnerable to being affected by these things than girls are because of their composition. And then also because they're developing budding sexuality is such a core part of who they are, and we just need to care for it. We need to protect it. We need to not allow boys to be exposed to too much too soon, because, like I say, when you mess with a boy's sexuality, you mess with the whole person of the boy. And I just want parents to be very much aware of this as their boys enter into adolescence.
Well, what can we do to help our boys? I mean, obviously, from what we're talking about, you need to really be vigilant about what boys are taking in via the computer, and you recommend having a communal computer in the kitchen so that it's not in a boy's bedroom. But what else can we do? What's the most important thing?
Well, I think it's very important to understand, you know, education is just so important, and understanding a boy's world is so crucial for parents. And I know that many parents are, you know, think of teenage boys. The play on the title, even my book, Boys Should Be Boys, is a play on boys will be boys, which is really sort of a derogatory statement towards boys. You know, well, it's sort of an excuse for bad behavior. There they go again. Those boys are going off and doing something, and there's nothing we can do about it. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, boys are really good. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. So really kind of understanding what our boys are up against, that a lot of times boys get pulled into things not because they're bad people or, you know, because they want to, but, you know, they're curious and they're interested, and our boys are being, you know, bombarded with so much more than we ever were, even 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So to understand that things are coming at boys in ways that they never have before. So in other words, boys are being talked to. I say boys are being talked to about sex, about violence, about their sexuality everywhere they turn because there's visual images. So parents need to kind of get in there and talk to them as well. And this is very frightening for parents, but they really don't need to be frightened. But just to sort of say, you know, if I were 14 or 15, it'd be kind of hard being a boy. I think it would be hard to sort of be up against these things, see, you know, see these things. So, you know, to ask yourself, what do you think about them, and how does this make you feel, and, you know, what are your thoughts about it? To really begin the dialogue, very, very gentle, basic, simple dialogue. And then to help boys come up with some expectations for themselves that makes them feel positive about themselves, makes them feel they have a choice about things. They don't just have to sort of go with the, you know, where the train is going, where I say. And then to really be keenly tuned into what boys are doing on the Internet, what chat rooms are they going to, you know, if boys are young and they have a MySpace page, I really think parents should be able to get in periodically and look at the MySpace page. And boys aren't going to want them to do it, but say, you know what, you can have one, but periodically I need to come in there and just check and make sure everything's okay. parents say, well, you know, then my son will think I don't trust him. It's really not a trust issue. It's a, you know, boys need to understand you're their ally, and there's a lot that's going to may come onto their MySpace page that they may not necessarily want. So since you're the ally, you need to be in there with them. But to really start that sense of being their ally, you know, when they're 7, 8, 9 years old, they'll allow you to continue it through the teen years, but you got to sort of work your way in there sooner rather than later.
We're talking about Boyhood in America this hour with Meg Meeker. She practices pediatric and adolescent medicine and counsels teens and their parents. She's the author of the book Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. Hoping to hear from you this morning as well, and tell us if you're worried about boyhood in America. Have you noticed things that concern you? And what works in your family to raise healthy boys? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Still to come today, at 1 o'clock, it's Talk of the Nation. There are crimes in war that are unforgivable, like genocide, ethnic cleansing, torture. But punishing the people who commit them is hard to do. After 1 on Talk of the Nation, do war crime trials really work? Veronica Rickert back with you today. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn, and we're talking about Boyhood in America this hour with Meg Meeker. She practices pediatric and adolescent medicine and is the author of the book Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. And Meg Meeker, we're going to go ahead and take a phone call now. Let's get a call in from Guy in Milwaukee. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Veronica. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you also for your the station, you know, advancing like a corp or a community. A sense of community.
That's great. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
What is your question about boys?
Well, I just wanted to say that the boyhood in general, I think there's a lot of fog right now, and there's a heavy reliance on the corporate media and whatever in the media stations. There's no real answers. You know, there's it's just the fog. And if you look also at, like, kids' shows, we have a beautiful six-year-old. The fact is, you watch these, like, I don't know, you watch Cinderella back from the 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, the old Walt Disney movies and such. They have maybe, I don't know, maybe as much as a minute between scenes. You know, there's a lot of time for you to get involved in these cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's 3 seconds. You got 3 seconds, wham, it's something new, wham, it's something new. Something is completely, holy cow. And I don't know how to describe it. It doesn't lead to reliance, I guess. You're on this ride. You're on like a thrill ride.
Thanks a lot for that call, Guy. And I think what you're talking about there is partially the speed of our culture, which is really picked up. Images go faster and faster right now. And I'm sure for boys, you know, if they're so susceptible to that, that's got to lead to some changes in the way that they think.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's one of the difficulties. It's an excellent point, because that's one of the big things that's changed in media as well, as the time on each scene, they become shorter and shorter and shorter. The old ones, you know, the old movies, you would actually focus in on the camera on one scene would be, you know, maybe 30 seconds, 60 seconds, whatever. And now it's just split seconds. And when you think about it from a boy standpoint, it's very intriguing, because you've got a lot of flashing imagery, and boys need to follow this. But if you think that many boys, particularly who have attention difficulties, if they're watching images that are constantly changing, how very difficult it is then for them to sit down with a book that has black lettering on white pages and none of the words jump or move or speak or scream or slam on their brakes. How difficult it is to go from that to, you know, being in a classroom and reading out of a textbook. It's very, those types of movies and those games are very difficult. They're hard for boys who have attention deficit, because they actually make the attention deficit worse. And I always tell my patients who have attention difficulties and hyperactivity, please limit the amount of time that you're on these games, because it really works against the work that we're trying to do with boys in getting them to focus more. So, again, it sort of feeds into that frenetic, sort of action-packed sense that things always need to change, they always need to move, and that a boy can't feel satisfied or entertained unless there is that constant changing stream of noise or visual imagery. So again, you know, parents, just to really be careful, subtle changes like that, even Sesame Street is, you know, kind of wonderful as it was when it came, made life quite hard for some kindergarten teachers because life in the classroom was pretty boring compared to what a child would see on, you know, on the television screen, because the A was different colors and it moved and it was different sizes and sometimes it sang to kids, you know. It's hard to write on a blackboard for a teacher and get kids to pay attention relative to what they see in media. So,
well, isn't some of this that boys are wired differently than girls, though? I mean, as I understand it, boys just don't have the motor coordination and control yet to maybe sit for an hour and take in a lesson, and a girl does because they mature physically faster.
Absolutely. And, you know, and this is one of the problems. We'll see boys that are quote-unquote, falling behind in first, second, and third grade because the girls color in the lines sooner. You know, they're able to read a little bit faster in general. And what happens is, with the focus on, you know, girls excelling relative to girls, boys then who aren't keeping up are thought of as maybe they have a learning disorder or they have a learning disability or they have attention problems. Really, they don't have any of that. They just haven't matured quickly enough. And I think, you know, with the increase in parents focusing so intently on their kids' education and the opportunities that kids have, you know, get unduly frightened and worried when boys aren't keeping up to girls in the early elementary school years. But really, you know, boys just need to be boys at that time, and they're going to learn differently, and they need to move more. You know, good teachers will tell you that if you have a classroom that's predominantly girls compared to predominantly boys, they have to really change their teaching style. You know, I had interviewed a teacher who taught eighth grade science, and she said, if I have a classroom of predominantly boys, I use a different curriculum. Those boys need to get up and move. They need to participate. They need hands-on. Versus the girls who'll sit there and listen to you longer. So it doesn't mean that, you know, this is not an intelligence issue. It really is a wiring issue and a maturity issue.
Is that an argument for single-sex education?
You know, I believe it is. And again, single-sex education is becoming much more popular in the United States. I really believe for this reason, because we're learning more about different learning styles. Boys' needs are very different than girls. You know, boys play differently, they learn differently, they behave differently in a classroom. And I think that, you know, one of the big problems that schools will have with budget cuts is one of the first things to go is physical education. Well, that's a death sentence to some of the boys in the class who need to leave, you know, handwriting and language arts and English and history and go, you know, bang around in the gym for a while and then come back and sit down. Recess cuts are also hard. Some teachers will discipline boys in the classroom if they act up by saying, okay, you can't go out for recess. It's one of the worst things you can do. The boy needs to get out to recess more before he can come and learn. So I think that that is very much one of the reasons why single-sex education is becoming more popular.
Let's take another phone call now. We've got Jim here from Algoma. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's interesting that I should hear this program because my son is a school teacher. I do not claim to be an authority on raising boys since I have five daughters and one son. Mm-hmm. However, he said that he calls today's young boys the lost generation. And he said one of the problems is that the number of female school teachers is steadily increasing. Two, the teachers, that the women who are teaching the girls, to me, they seem like young girls, feel that if a boy is a bad student, he's a bad person. This is the interaction that he's getting from the and also from these women teachers. And, of course, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy if you tell a boy he's a bad boy because he doesn't do his homework, which is ridiculous. He's not a bad person.
Hmm.
That's a comment coming from the teaching ranks, and it's scary.
Does that resonate with you, Meg Meeker?
Definitely. I've heard this over and over and over, particularly from male teachers who are outnumbered with female teachers. And I think that this is a fallout of our focus and encouragement on girls, you know, which is great. I mean, it's really helped girls. But girls in general behave better in a classroom in the early elementary school years, and boys are a little feistier, and they may pull pranks or do different things. And if a boy behaves like that, there is very much this sense from a teacher that you're a bad kid, you're a bad boy. And boys will feel bad if they have attention difficulties, if they have learning difficulties, even if they're a bright kid, but they're a bit antsy. And I think that a lot of women teachers don't necessarily mean to convey this to the boys, but the boys pick up on this. And this stays with them through elementary school, junior high, and high school. Even the way our culture approaches teen boys, if you think of those two words, teen boy, many of us conjure up an image of a boy on a billboard somewhere where his pants are falling off him, he has a couple of lip rings, and he's got funny-looking, very dark hair, and he's up to no good. And we think of boys kind of as bad. You know, they're going to do bad things. And one boy that I was interviewing, darling 15-year-old boy, I said, what is the one thing that you want adults and parents to know about teenage boys? And his words were chilling to me, and he said, we're not all bad getting ready to do bad things.
Hmm.
And that was sort of their sense, is that we adults are just waiting for them to start having too much sex, drink too much, you know, and do bad things. And so I really think that we need to pay attention, teachers, mothers, and dads. How are we talking to our boys? What is our tone of voice? What are the words we're using? Are we much more impatient with our boys than we are with our girls? And I know for me, I can be less patient. And I think these are the kind of cues that we're giving our boys about who they are as human beings that we have to be very, very careful about. And I think that we all are guilty if we stop and look at how we really are talking to our boys. We don't mean to be, but we need to change it.
Let's take another call now. We've got Dimitri with us from Kenosha. Hi, Dimitri.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question to Ms. Meeker. I wonder whether her research has extended onto educational and parenting practices in other countries. And I know that she's talking about American boys specifically. But the reason I ask is that in many troublesome social trends that she's describing, gaming, internet, pornography, are just as prevalent in other Western societies, and their boys seem to be doing just fine. And I think that, you know, if we look back in history, we'll see that education, a couple of decades ago even, was embracing precisely the kind of educational approaches that would today be characterized as catering more to girls, that is to say, heavily text-oriented, little to no visual element, little movement based on studious approach to material and so on. And in those days, I don't think anybody would dispute, that boys thrived. So there seems to be a little inconsistency here from where I'm standing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's a combination of many factors coming together at once. Certainly, there are boys in other countries who are, you know, are exposed to a lot through the internet, through video games, and so on and so forth. But here's the problem, and I think when it all kind of comes together in a head in America, when you combine a school experience of a boy who may feel that he's falling behind in school or that he is perceiving himself to be a bad kid or he's just too bouncy or whatever. And then you bring that boy home, and he comes home, and 70% of African-American boys and about half of Caucasian and Hispanic boys don't have a dad in the home. So they're coming home, and they have a single mom. And then you combine that with, a stressed parent who doesn't have enough time to spend with their kids, sort of fractured families. Families have moved. Maybe a kid is born in New York, and now part of his family is living in California, and so on and so forth. And then you factor into that, maybe a little, some poverty, and you pull all of these things together: less family time, less dad time, less mom time, difficult experience at school, and then more exposure to things which are going to isolate a boy, like video games and internet, very, very isolating to boys. And it's kind of a recipe for disaster for the boy. Many boys can handle one or two of those factors, but when they all come together, I think that's when we start to see trouble for a lot of boys. Disconnection from a mom or disconnection from a dad and siblings is very, very painful for most boys.
Well, it's worth pointing out that in a lot of non-Western cultures in the world, the whole extended family can take part in that, in the raising of that boy, and often lives under one roof, whereas in this country, boys often sort of are cloistered with their peer group and only their peer group.
Exactly, and that's an excellent point. Even if you look at the past 10 years, 10 years ago, boys in high school and junior high didn't walk around with cell phones. They didn't have video games in their pockets. They had to talk to people. They had to look at their face. But now, boys can sort of float in their own little peer circle that an adult, a parent, may have no clue about what's going on. And it's very, very isolating for boys, and boys float. And a boy can withstand a lot coming his way, bad school experience, pornography, internet, all this kind of stuff, if he has an aunt or an uncle or a grandma or siblings or somebody that there's a sense of a core family unit that he fits in. But when that breaks up and he travels in this peer circle, it really throws him off balance. So that's a very important dynamic that's going on with our boys now that seems to be getting worse and worse, every couple of years.
And parents sometimes are kind of complicit in that because they think that's sort of what the boy wants. He wants to hang out with his friends. He doesn't want to hang out with his mom and dad. And I guess the point your book makes is that's almost the worst thing you can do is to retreat.
It really is. It absolutely is, because boys get very, very lonely. And yes, they need peers, but they don't need peers all the time. They need some time with their peers. They need face-to-face time with their peers. But we know ultimately, through all the great psychology research, that what really anchors boys and what really helps boys choose good behaviors over bad as they march through those very important teen years is interaction with their parents. The parents, by far and away, one parent, by far and away, influences a teenage boy's behavior more than his peers. It looks on the outside like it's peers, but whether he's going to start down a bad road depends, or stay on a good road depends more on his relationship with mom or dad than it does on his peers. So it's all about balance, and I think that we parents tend to think, okay, we just sort of let our boys fly when they're 13 or 14, and we sort of let them loose into a peer culture, thinking this is what they really need, when in fact, they need some of that, but they still need a tremendous amount of contact with mom and dad.
Let's take another call here. We've got Dan on the line from Frankville. Hi, Dan.
Howdy. When I was about 20-some years ago, I was going to have a child, and I solved the whole problem. I actually lucked out on the problem because I thought, I don't want to have a boy. This is 20-some years ago. I mean, if I do, it's going to be a major, major project, and then I have to cross my fingers to boot. But I had a girl because, you know, the different psychology. But with these boys, my problem was is the culture, to me, in my opinion, is poison. And the people that want to manipulate boys and make them feel insecure can make a lot of cash off the situation. And they know this animal, like almost like psychologists. In fact, they probably have psychologists figured this stuff out, how to make these, and it isn't just boys, it's girls too, but girls and boys, like you say, have different psychology. The boys don't even stand the chance. And as far as, like this show, I suppose this is a good way that a person could start raising a boy by listening to a show like this, but for me, as a truck driver or whatever, drive around the country and I go into warehouses and talk to people, the grown-ups can't even take care of themselves. Basically across the nation, especially in rural parts and stuff like that. And if they heard the show, they'd just turn it off because they wouldn't understand it. It wouldn't be that they wouldn't like it. They just the grown-ups don't even understand it. So if you can't even get the grown-ups on deck, I don't know how you get the boys on deck.
Well, thank you, Dan. And we're going to get our guest response to your call in just a minute, but we have to take a quick break first. We're talking about raising boys in America with Meg Meeker, who practices pediatric and adolescent medicine and counsels teens and their parents. She's the author of the book, Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. And we're hoping you'll call in this hour as well and tell us your thoughts about the problems with raising boys in America and what works, what's helping. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. We'd be happy to hear from you this morning. I'm Veronica Rickert here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today on Wisconsin Public Radio at 11 o'clock, join us for Larry Mueller's program as he talks about medicine and spirituality today. His guest is Steve Buzalaki of Madison, author of White Coat Wisdom. I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company this week for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network, as we talk about raising boys this hour with the author of the book, Boys Should Be Boys, Meg Meeker. And Meg Meeker, we had a call from Dan there right before the break. Do you want to respond to Dan's call? Meg, are you there? Hello? Do we lose our guest? Maybe she got dropped over the break. So let's go ahead and hear from another one of our callers as we get Meg Meeker back on the line. Lisa in Eau Claire. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I, you know, this is personal for me. I have 3 boys, and I notice a lot of times that boys have been told that it's not okay to be boys, but they're not really told how they're supposed to behave and what's okay. And they have a lot of feelings that they're told they shouldn't express, and they're not allowed to be, you know, behave in a way that makes them feel good, be physical and get outside and run and jump and be boys. They're somewhat expected to behave like girls typically are expected to behave. And I guess I would just like to say with our boys that we encourage them to be open with us and to talk to us about things, and that we won't judge them if they feel a certain way. And we found that their friends choose to be very open with us, too, and discuss things with us that, you know, they tell us they wouldn't talk to their parents about. And so for us, that makes us feel, you know, positive that at least they're talking to someone about it. And I'll take comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot for that call, Lisa. And I know in her book, Meg Meeker talks a lot about the importance of letting boys play those games that sometimes freak adults out, letting them play in the woods, letting them play war if they want to play war, even though it's violent to the casual viewer. It's sort of a rite of boyhood to be a little more rough and tumble, and that there is that connection with nature and boyhood and really exerting themselves physically as part of the learning process and part of the growing process for boys. And Meg Meeker, do we have you back yet? I'm sorry we don't have our guest yet. We'll still try to get her, but let's hear from more of you right now. We just heard from Lisa and Eau Claire. Thank you for that call. And going on now to Steve calling from Houston. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. This is a great show. I'm so grateful you have it on. I used to live in the Madison area. I have 2 sons, and so many of your calls have been great. I had experience a couple years ago when they were younger where I felt like I was losing touch with my boys, and they were struggling in school, and they're actually very bright. And I'm not trying to criticize the school system necessarily, but I found that, you know, there was, honestly, my sister, my second son, had all women teachers, and he just couldn't connect. And I got him plugged in with a male teacher, and he really sailed. He always talked about the teacher, and I found that what he wants to do is he wants to connect with boys. And, you know, all your guests have said the same thing, and I agree that, tragically, our culture, the media, the TV, it's just beating the death our boys. You know, the boys, the images of boys on TV, they're overweight, they're stupid, they're fat, and our girls are all stars. Nothing against girls, but our culture is lifting up girls, which is great, you know, it's just great, but it's tearing our boys down. So I stepped up to the plate, and I signed my boys up for a soccer program. I stepped up to coach. I never played soccer, and it was an all-boys team. That's what I wanted. And I found that they really started to take off. That's the first thing I did, is just get involved with your boys, especially as a father. Fathers need to get involved with their boys. Our prisons are full of boys who don't have fathers. And the second thing I did was I got them involved in a youth program. They have them at the YMCA. I got them involved in my church program. And they had a rite of passage, you know, that talked about the importance of purity, respecting women. And I set the example in my family of respecting my wife. And I don't let them see me, because I don't watch crap. You know, I don't whistle at women. I'm a married man. I don't watch garbage on TV, and I don't let them watch it. These are things that have worked for me. And my boys, they respect me for it, and they know where I stand. I filtered my son's friends. You want to go out with this person, that's okay. His buddies, this person, no. Is he doing drugs? And I find out. You know, we've got to be in our face with our boys. We've got to have enough guts and enough courage to say no to things and to say yes to some things, because they want to know where the limits are. You can ask Meg. This is a great guest.
So you're really you're talking about being the strongest thing in your son's life, and not letting that peer group take over the role of being the strongest thing.
Yeah, and it's hard. It really is, because when they get a certain age, actually, my sons listen to me and they follow me, but their peers are pulling on them. And I actually, no offense to schools, but I've taken my sons out of public school and I put them in a Christian school, because, and you can, you have good public schools too, because of the peer influence. And I'm careful who they have friends with. You know, I've taken great steps. Actually, I even moved my family to get out of a culture where I felt like it was just drug infested.
Hmm.
Like, sadly, a lot of our public schools. And we have to decide, is having a million-dollar house better, or is it the future of my children? And I put my children ahead of any material gains. So, yeah, I am involved in their life deeply. And, you know, it's really starting to pay off. I see my first son really growing into being a man. And he's maintained his purity, which I'm so grateful for. And he doesn't do drugs. Because he looks at me, and he's, you know, he respects me for that, and I'm really grateful. I'm grateful to God.
Well, Steve, you know, that's an inspiring call for me. I'm the mother of a son too, and I'm glad to hear from you today. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, and
thank
God bless you.
We had Steve there from Houston, and I think we've also got our guest back now. Meg Meeker, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Awesome.
Sorry, I don't know what happened to the phone. Just died.
Well, you missed some great calls there. I don't know if you heard anything that Steve said. Did you happen to catch anything?
I didn't, no.
Well, he was talking about something I know that you would applaud, which is being really deeply, deeply involved in his son's lives as far as coaching them and getting them involved in soccer and physical activities, in getting them involved in youth groups and moving them away from areas that he thought were, you know, unsavory as far as drugs went. And that's something I definitely saw echoed in your book about, you know, trying to be the strongest force in your son's life.
You know, it's very, very true. And I know that the caller that came in, the gentleman who had called in before I was cut off, you know, had a good point about traveling around the country and talking about how confused he sees adults and parents. And you know, the sort of sense that, you know, is there really any hope for our boys? And I will tell you that I have total hope in our boys. And if I didn't have hope for their future and the wonderful things that they can enjoy in life, I could never have, you know, written a book. And, the bottom line is, for all that's coming at our kids, and there is a lot, and there's a lot of very negative stuff coming towards our boys through school or media and so on and so forth, the answer isn't rocket science. It's really right in front of us. But sometimes for us parents, it almost seems too simple. And I think that the gentleman who called and was talking about, being involved in his kids' soccer and stuff, you know, it really hits the nail on the head. What boys want is they want time with a dad, time with a mother, just time. in the car, in the grocery store, sitting in the backyard, kicking a soccer ball, driving to a hockey game, because kids pick up their cues about who they believe they are by watching their parents' reactions to them. And a kid reads a parent, a boy reads a mom or a dad all the time, and he's always looking for affirmation about himself. If he sees that his dad wants to be with him, in his mind he thinks, oh, I must be a pretty good person because my dad likes to be with me, therefore I'm a good person. You know, the whole way he develops his identity is by reading his parents' responses to him. When he sees that his parents want to be with him any time of day or night and they want to spend more time with him, he feels better about himself, and that is the best defense against all the nonsense that's coming at him. And any parent can give that to their kid. And kids need that so much more than they do, you know, more piano lessons, trumpet lessons, ballet, or soccer, hockey, whatever. So that time with kids is more important now than it ever has been.
Well, thanks for that call, Steve. And let's take another call. We'll go now to Dave calling from Richland Center. Hi, Dave, you're up.
Oh, hi. Thanks for your show today. Sure. I actually work as a youth therapist, in-home therapist, and also operate a treatment foster home. And I was just going to add a few comments. The fact I find it very interesting. Every one of my clients are all boys. They're all at risk. And every one of the kids that we've had come through the foster treatment home have been boys. And there's one common denominator that connects all these kids. And every single one of them, we can trace back, none of them have a dominant father-loving figure in their lives. There has been just a tragic breakdown in that. And I think that we're reaping the consequences of that, of the breakup of the family unit, and just as your guest has stated, just the importance of the connection, not only from mom, but also from dad. And I'll take any comments off the air, but I think what I see in the field that I work in, also just overwhelmed with working with youth and at-risk youth, what we see is a fatherless generation, just a generation that has been raised up without fathers, and we're starting to see what important role that fatherhood plays in our society and just in the development of our youth. Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much for that call, Dave. And Meg Meeker, we're getting close to the end of the hour here, so maybe we can move quickly and get through some calls. But what do you want to say to Dave?
Great comment. You know, a boy who sees that his own dad, who perceives his own dad doesn't want to be with him for whatever reason, maybe dad had no choice in leaving, whatever, thinks, why should I like myself as a man if the man who is the primary love in my life as a man doesn't even want to be with me? Why should I want to like who I am? Moms out there who are divorced, you got to let your exes see your sons. Very, very important. A lot of women sort of drive the dads away, can't do it. Boys need men in their lives. Uncles, grandfathers, older brothers, if you're out there and you have a boy in your life who doesn't have a dad, please drive over to his house, pick him up, take him and hit baseballs, do anything, change his life.
And on to Matt in Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Morning. I'm kind of wondering if you've noticed in studying this topic if there's any difference between boys who grow up in a rural area, maybe on a farm or just living in the country, versus those that grow up in the city. I know myself, I grew up in a rural area, and I used to meet up with some of the local boys. We would grab rifles and go off and target shoot. And, you know, my boys love doing that stuff. And some of my best memories are going off with my uncles, either goose hunting or deer hunting. It would be just the boys. And when we'd be out, you know, I'd ask my father different questions. You know, when you start getting older, you ask about girls. And the way that I learned is, you know, my father always said, you're the head of the household, but you have to remember that your wife is a lady. You don't yell at her. You don't hit her. You know, you have to be an example for your children. And all of those words still ring in my head. You know, as some of the clearest images of my childhood are being out with my father and my uncles, and those things ring true to me. And I'm wondering if kids in the city have the same experience.
You know, I did specifically study difference between boys raised in the city and boys raised in, you know, rural areas. But I will say there's a lot of evidence that boys need a lot of time outside. you know, a lot of parents say, how do I keep my kids away from television and video games and all that kind of stuff? I said, open the door and then shut it behind him. You know, make him go outside. Intellectually, physically, mentally, there's a lot of stimulation outside in the woods and in nature that a boy doesn't get when he's inside. You think about the cities. Almost everywhere you go, you have to pay to do something. So I think it's harder for boys, you know, and out when you're outdoors, you also have to create your own entertainment. You have to find stuff to do. You have to, you know, use your creative and your imagination to, you know, to fill those sort of boring times and spaces in your life. So I think that's extremely important. You know, outside time with dad, it's very, you know, and boys bond with other boys through activities. You know, girls bond through talking. Boys bond through activities. So a bonding that takes place between a dad and a son out in nature when they're enjoying a common activity, you know, what a treasure. You know, what a great, great treasure. But how simple, too.
And I'm sorry, Meg, I have to jump in there. We're out of time now, but I want to thank you for your thoughts this hour. It's been a really thought-provoking hour, and thank you for sharing your ideas with us.
Well, thank you, Veronica.
All right, thank you. Meg Meeker practices pediatric and adolescent medicine and counsels teens and their parents. She's the author of the book Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. Veronica Rickert with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.